Welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brad.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at the BK Glue Guys, netsdaily.com. Almighty baller, Brian.
Talk to me, Mike. Talk to me.
Big old Nets win. Nets are back in the playoff race, Brian. Ready to roll.
Heck of a W. What some takeaways? Go ahead. No, wait. Should we first do netsdaily.com, allmightyballer.com, iTunes reviews, five of them. We want them. We need them.
Love them. Need them. Brian is also wearing his special UV lights glasses.
It's not a sponsor. It actually, I'll be honest, like, it's not a sponsor. We want them to sponsor because I want some more. These things kind of help. I used to get eye twitches by the end of the day, and now I don't.
Brian looks positively hipster. No, I don't, but I feel like that's actually worse, that my eyes are so desensitized to the shining light of a computer that they are. I'm going to be blind by the age of 40 and deaf by the age of 30, which I am 30.
Not with a pair of glasses, Doug.
Hashtag Brian. Hashtag Big W.
That's right, everybody. Hashtag Brian.
I'm coming in hot right off the top here, Brian. I believe that this was the biggest win of the Nets season so far, Brian.
Really? Do you actually think that?
Here's why. Okay, so I actually looked. It's not that hard to look past at the past Nets wins and look through them and decipher through all of those victories because there's only been 21 of them. But here are the contenders for best win of the season. I'll tell you why the Charlotte win was the best win of the season. They beat Cleveland, of course, early in the year. It was October 25th, so that almost doesn't count anymore. I mean, it does, but it almost doesn't. They beat the Thunder in Mexico City, another good win. But here's why this game is the biggest. Partly the biggest because two players led the way in this game that matter so much to the Nets' future and mostly matter to Sean Marks' future. He took a big bet on Allen Crabbe, and Allen Crabbe has been disappointing this year, but he's been heating up as of late. And he scored 29 points last night, had 8 rebounds. And then Caris LeVert, I mean, he just did 22 and 8 assists. But, I mean, he was giving you everything you wanted from what you hope Caris LeVert's going to be at some point in his career if he's not it now, which is a guy who can drive to the hoop, who can dish, who can even hit a three-point shot when he needs to. I mean, he's just like a consistent three-point shot away from being really, really good. And also, and it's very few times this season, even when they've won, it was a game of which you could enjoy the whole way through. There were no negative points. The Nets maintained their lead, and the Nets maintained their lead throughout almost the entirety of the game. It felt like a good, clean Nets victory, which this team, even when they win, is like they have to win it on a Spencer Dinwiddie shot at the end. This time it was like, wow, maybe the Nets actually are playing well. That's why they won this game.
Yeah, I'll play devil's advocate with you. I was looking at some Reddit stuff from some Portland Trailblazer guys, and they were like, this is probably a couple months ago or maybe a month ago before the sort of resurgence of Allen Crabbe. And they were like, yeah, the deal with Allen Crabbe is that he'll have a 30-point game and then just disappear to just give everyone the appearance of potential. And then it just fades away. And then you get bugged by him enough to the point where he feels like he has to have another 30-point game. And then he's back on your radar again. So my concern, and this is again devil's advocate because seen enough, but that this will come and go and do more going in the long run. But here's what I remember. I had a very like sort of vivid thought when I was watching this Charlotte game. And I was really paying attention. I was like, wow, this is the first time I've really, really like, you know, been invested, paid attention to, and I was like, I was sort of conjuring what it feels like to be emotionally invested in a game like we were, you know, 3 years ago when we were like in, you know, the middle of the pack in the playoffs. You kind of like when you're bad for extended periods of time, you forget sort of how you used to watch basketball. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, and you watch it in a different way, right? You look for different things.
Yeah, so like I'm so used to just watching for individual like glimmers of hope.
Just nuggets of like a cool Jared Allen dunk that may mean something 3 years down, 3 years away.
Right. And when we like strode in and sort of just confidently laid a 10-point W on Charlotte's head, I was like, wow, that's what it kind of used to feel like when we were, you know, watching for like, you know, how often can we get road wins, you know, comfortably. So yeah, it was nice. I agree with you to a certain extent that that was, that it sort of, it had those feelings or, you know, reminded me of those feelings that I used to have. Another thing, angry LeVert, got clotheslined by true boy Cody Zeller. Do you think this is like a family thing? Do you think that was like a mafia hit?
It's absolutely a mafia hit. Cody Zeller is not welcome on our podcast. Tyler Zeller is not welcome on our podcast. Luke Zeller is not welcome on our podcast.
They're on the Plumleys as well.
They're all in the McRoberts. You know, there's multiple McRoberts too. They're all, I don't know what they're feeding them in Indiana. I think that's where they're all from. Anyways.
Hey.
And like, I like how we assume that Caris LeVert is like a calm guy because he's not super duper expressive, but he was also talking. I mean, okay. So the Zeller, that was one of the worst screens I've seen in the NBA this season in terms of just being viciously a clothesline.
Just trying to elbow someone in the throat.
And so what? So that's an important moment in our evaluation of Caris LeVert, right? Is that they've lost so much, the Nets, and you hope to continue to see a fighting spirit. A guy gets elbowed, clotheslined in the throat, and what you want to see is him to come back and make a big play, and he did come back and make a big play, right?
Well, how often have we seen an angry LeVert ever? Like, it was just a nice experiment to see. To paraphrase yours and mine's, one of our top favorite films about basketball, White Men Can't Jump, when he's talking to Wesley Snipes about, you know, how he's trying to get the other guys angry because they can't play well when they're angry, but he thinks Wesley Snipes can play well when he's angry. It's nice to see LeVert does actually play. You know, he drove to the basket kind of repeatedly on Cody Zeller, got angry. If there is a future in which we're, you know, playing meaningful games, that's good to know about Caris LeVert, that it causes him to elevate the game.
And a slight diversion here. I'm sure you didn't read Steve Francis wrote a Players Tribune piece about his life. You know,
I saw it and I didn't read it.
It's a lot in it. Very interesting, you know, his journey from going selling drugs on a street corner to 4 years later being in the NBA, and he played one high school basketball game. But the thing in it, way it starts, is something that like we hear about as being sort of like a tall tale of NBA players, but it actually, well, according to Steve Francis, happened that Sam Cassell, I guess, was playing on some team, and Steve Francis was a rookie or something like that, and Sam Cassell took him out the night before the game and had him stay out till 5 a.m. And as they were leaving the night, they didn't drink allegedly, but as they were leaving the night at 5 a.m., Sam Cassell started talking crap to him and saying, I'm doing this to you on purpose because I want you to be super tired for the game. And that's what, and then he got his ass kicked by Sam Cassell. This is like, there's these little things that like the Caris LeVert moment, like, so everyone's operating sort of on a flat line of emotions besides Draymond Green. Most of these players are all the same emotion throughout most of the game, and each one is waiting for a certain moment to happen to maybe spark them, to push them to a different level. And Caris LeVert got pushed to a little bit different level, and we saw, you know, strongman LeVert like we've seen strongman Jared Allen over this past, you know, 2 months or so. Jared Allen had another tasty dunk, another well thought out, beautiful slam in the lane, and you saw the Hornets player get out of the way this time. I forget who it was. I think it was like Kemba Walker, some guard. Doesn't matter. But honestly, Brian, it's maybe not actually the biggest win of the year. Emotionally, how I've been feeling is watching this team. I think they've won. I have the stat here about how many games they've won in February. Oh, they won one game in February. Now we're in March. It's just been, it's been a rough go of it. And then to get this win on the road against a team that you're allegedly the same level on, but you, I don't even think you could put the Nets on the same level of the Hornets, really. And for it to be a comfortable, happy, everyone's goes home and can fly on the plane happy win is just fan-effing-tastic.
Quincy AC got himself a veritable DNP.
Okay, so I'm at as good of a place as I've ever been with Quincy AC in my life, I think.
because of his DNPs? Because
his DNPs, and he's a fantastic bench guy. He's thrown himself completely into the bench mob, leader of the bench mob.
We should do a power rankings of best like bench guys of all time.
Of all time?
Like, just pure, like, relegated to, like, bench celebration. I mean, like, Ronny Turiaf sort of is legendary, obviously, in that role. But
that's a pretty prestigious list. That's to be a very solid bench guy. And, you know, Quincy Acey is really igniting the bench and is really driving us. I mean, I think he was the reason why the Nets won the game, because if he was out on the floor, they would have lost.
So basically, he's lost all of his minutes to Dante Cunningham, who is kind of effectively doing what Quincy Acey did last year, which is basically hit an improbable amount of threes, an unsustainable amount, which he will assuredly regress to that mean eventually. But so Quincy's probably looking at Dante Cunningham being like, I remember what that was like. Like, that was nice. That half a season where I was shooting like 50% from the 3-point line.
So I hope that the Nets can re-sign Dante Cunningham for whatever, like $1 million.
Honestly, this is all they're good for. They're only good for being traded for one half season of above average 3-point shooting. You don't want to sign a guy like that.
No, give me one or two more. Give me a 1-year contract with him, and then do the Zeller where he keeps hitting this improbable amount of threes, and then they flip him for a second round pick for no good reason.
I don't know. I feel like if he comes back in over the offseason, he's like, I did my half a season. I no longer identify with that version of myself. Yeah, but anyways, as far as I can tell, the big difference is Dante Cunningham is just like a little bit calmer, more sure of himself, doesn't overplay to the same extent that Quincy Acey does. Not that it moves the needle a ton, but it is he's like he seems like right now it's just more of the positive player to play, and that could also, of course, like regress, you know, before the end of the season. I can't knock the decision to what I like about Kenny Atkinson is that he will give players DNPs who have been playing consistently 20 minutes per game. Like Mozgov didn't last long. He got like his, you know, 10 games in or whatever, and then he was, you know, properly sequestered. And I think it seems to suggest the same thing's happening with Quincy Acey, albeit it took a lot longer. We had to deal with a fair amount of injuries, and he had to, you know, elevate his playing minutes. But I'm glad to see that Atkinson kind of comes to the right decision ultimately. You know, whereas, like, we dealt with P.J. Carlissimo playing Reggie Evans 30 minutes a game for two seasons. So, and among other coaches who lasted longer. Anyways, do you want to talk about the hot topic or what?
Yeah, the hot topic. So on netsdaily.com, you'll see it there. It's a sort of a rewrite of this Victor Mather. I'm not going to lie, I don't really know that name, but he works for the New York Times. He's a basketball reporter, and he wrote a piece. I guess he was out in Oakland or San Fran or wherever the Warriors play now. And basically the point of the column was that have the Nets actually overachieved? And he pulls out a couple of reasons why he thinks that is. The Nets have won 59% of their games against the point spread, meaning, you know, they covered the line 59% of the time, second only to the Celtics. He points out the injuries and the fact that this team was supposed to have Jeremy Lin, and then they didn't have Jeremy Lin, and they're supposed to have D'Lo for the whole season. They haven't had him, and then Spencer Dinwiddie has had to rise up from the scrap heap to become, you know, the star of the All-Star Game skills competition that he was. And also another interesting stat, I don't know if we think about it this way all the time, is that D'Lo is the only player on the Nets who is a top 20 pick, which is, you know, we do, obviously the Nets haven't had picks for a while, but the fact that, like, usually you can even fill out your roster.
Forgetting Jahlil Okafor right now as we speak.
Oh, that's right. Oh, and so did Victor Mather, however you say his name.
Why are you saying is Mather? Isn't it Mather?
Marshall Mathers?
Yeah, going Mather.
So the main point of the piece is that the Nets have overachieved. They have 21 wins. This team should not even have 21 wins. They should not be as close as they are in most games. Brian, what do you say?
Well, it's funny. It's interesting to see the sort of going through the Nets Daily comment section, which is always a hoot. Can't recommend it enough on something like this because,
by the way, we should make like a coffee table book of the best Nets Daily comments. just no context, just the comments themselves.
So the piece is an op-ed, you know, achievement is a soft science, right? You can't point to, cause it's relative to your individual expectations. It's just not a quantifiable thing if you can overachieve or underachieve. And yet people are hotly debating, from a variety of different perspectives. So the big ones are win losses or win totals, versus the point spread. So the point of the article is point spread. Anyone who's arguing on, well, you can't argue that because of the wins, is missing the entire point of the article, which is that, you know, it's frustrating and interesting to note that, you know, we're losing closer than we probably should. Although somebody very astutely pointed out, who I'm assuming is a degenerate gambler, that named Whoopty Damn Do on Nets Daily, that prior to January 10th, they were the bettor's hero, beating the spread 25 times and disappointing in 15, whereas afterwards it's they're batting 500, which is what Vegas tends to do. So 12-12. So it seems like they've got them pinned down these days. And would you say that the Nets were beating expectations earlier on in the season? I would say most people would say yes. And then this last recent dearth has been...
it's been a real dearth. I'll tell you what, a real dirty dearth.
Yeah. But you should also, you have to include all the injuries that we've, you know, we have... all of our players were hurt at one point, you know, like Hollis Jefferson missed a lot of games, LeVert, D'Lo, obviously, with that saying, Jeremy Lin. So if you're not constantly updating your expectations with all of the news, you know, of the day in mind, if you came into the season expecting 35 wins and now we're at 20 wins and you're like, well, I expected 35 wins and you didn't, you know, incorporate the fact that there's so many injuries to our starting lineup, then you're going to have a bad time. What can I say? You're going to have a bad time.
Well, yeah. So, and you pointed this out. So the Nets were 11-15 early in the season after beating the Wizards. I think it was a game that may have been the game where they like won by 30 or 40 points. The Nets beat the Wizards by that much in Brooklyn. So they were 11-15. Since that point, they're 10-30 in those remaining 40 games after that point. So it's like if you think about, and as you said, early in the season, they were massively overachieving, for sure, massively. And now it doesn't feel like they're overachieving. And what's frustrating is because it's almost because they lose so close in so many games. There's been so many times when, you know, well, we had the piece from 538 that came out that said that the Nets are more jobbed by the refs at the end of games than any other team that is in the NBA. It was by a huge margin. Something that every Nets fan felt like they knew intuitively and just by watching this team, but now it's confirmed by statistics. And it almost feels like because the Nets have lost so close to in all of these games that it's more painful. The losing is more painful than if they got blown out. Because I know you and I, when we watch games, or at least for me personally, when they're losing by 30 in the first half, I'm able to tune it off and then I'm able to move on. And it's not something I think about ever after the point when they're blown out. But when they lose by 4 points to a good team where, you know, they had a shot to tie up the game and they didn't get the shot, then it had a foul at the end of the game that extends the lead for the other team, that is more painful. That weighs on you more. And it makes you think, I don't know, not more negatively about the team, but it makes you kind of knock down the team in a certain sense in your head. I really can't say, though, that they've overachieved. I think they've achieved. They've dealt with adversity, but I will say this about injuries. The Jeremy Lin injury is one thing. The D'Lo injury is also one thing. They are significant, months-long, season-long injuries. Some of the injuries, like LeVert and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I think, not saying that those guys weren't legitimately hurt, which I'm sure they were, I think those injuries are more of like, why would we rush them back let's have them sit an extra game or two just because, you know, they're not going for the playoffs this year. You know what I mean? Like, I think you could point to say they've had all these injuries to the starting lineup to really important players. Some of those injuries, those guys could have played more games. I think they just decided not to, because what's the point? Why rush them back?
So it's interesting because this is like a non-transferable way of quantifying achievement, right? So like, yes, under the guise of win totals, we are not overachieving. In the context of point spreads within a loss, we are overachieving. So, and I think like if I were an AP statistics high school student, my senior thesis might be something to the effect of like the effects of not having a first your draft pick in a season where you're doing poorly and how that probably tightens the spread for you.
Yes.
I think that's like, so if you're looking at the against the spread rankings, we're second overall behind the Boston Celtics, and behind us is Toronto, New Orleans, who, if you're not paying attention, have been lighting the world on fire suddenly. Pacers, Clippers, Sixers. So an interesting group. And like, let's see how many of the actual over under.
Well, and a lot of those, I think. So what's interesting, and you pointed this out about the Nets, is that they overachieved so massively early in the season. They've almost built up this cachet of overachieving against the spread, almost victories or whatever. Like, the Pacers are that same team. No one thought the Pacers were going to be good. And I'm sure in October, November, December, they were massively, you know, strong against the spread. And now they've probably tailed off. Toronto, the same thing. Toronto's, no one pays attention to them. And then they're, what, three games behind the Rockets for the overall best record in the NBA.
And it's also like the bottom of the list is really interesting to look at, too. By the way, you can check this out at vegasinsider.com/NBA/against the spread, which I find endlessly interesting. But the bottom five teams are Cleveland, Oklahoma, Milwaukee, Charlotte, and Golden State, which is an interesting crew. Obviously, Cavs probably make a ton of sense. But it's funny. It's interesting to see, like, everyone. I mean, I'm very high on Milwaukee every game, and they really are, like, I don't understand why Milwaukee isn't a more elite team, like, on a pretty regular basis. And this has been the case for a couple of years now. I felt this way, and I'm just like I don't understand it, because they have. I mean, how rare is it that you have three 20-point scorers on the same team? Like, it's so rare.
And then sometimes one of those guys is a generational talent, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's not just like the Larry Hughes, Coutinho, Mobley types. Like,
right.
They have Giannis and then Eric Bledsoe, who's fantastically talented, and then Chris Middleton, Jabari's back. And but they're a weird team. I think they're like, so I put them in the category of like my Wizards, is that they have talent, but they don't have the like two or three other players in the mix that actually win you basketball games. They just have sort of like really high level talent. They've guys who would be on your fantasy basketball team, but then their totality of their roster is not really as strong as you would want.
Have you been watching Bojan Bogdanović, by the way, lately?
No.
Dude, he's on fire.
I've watched Bogdan Bogdanović against the Nets. He looked amazing. Yeah. What has Bojan been up to?
Just, you know, becoming the man we all hoped he could be someday. Wizards got him on the wrong year, man.
Yeah, are we regretting that he left the Nets? Aren't we happy, though, that he's... I mean, I liked him, but... His game was not fun to watch. Just not an enjoyable watch.
Especially when you factor in that we got... Who was it? Jared Allen for Bojan?
Jared Allen. Yeah, that's the trade. And Andrew Nicholson, which was, again, part of the Allen Crabbe trade, blah, 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 blah. Mirza Toledovic, though, over Bojan Bogdanović, right? In your heart?
All day, every day. Well, in my heart, yeah.
That's not
a question. But yeah, so, I mean...
So what's your answer? Do you think the Nets have overachieved?
So, I mean, like, yes, I think so. I think, like, you can make a pretty compelling argument for that. Obviously, achievement is a nebulous, non-scientific thing.
When they aren't winning games. If you're winning games, yes.
Yeah, so, like... So you're already starting from a subjective point of view, and you know, it's not great. But even still, with just win totals in mind, like if we if we end up winning five more games this season, our record will be, you know, what did we get last season?
I think it's 26. Well, the Nets won 20 games last year, I think, right?
Right.
Maybe maybe less than that. But just about that, let's say. 20.
A six-game improvement, despite all of the issues of this season, all of the setbacks. And so that's basically, I mean, somebody was talking about on the comment section, a comment that I quite like, and one that I've actually seen and heard before in the past, actually from the Celtics Roundtable podcast guys, which is that this Nets team reminds them of the 2013-2014 Celtics, who won 25 games. And their lineup was like Avery Bradley, Jeff Green, Kelly Olynyk, Jared Sullinger, and like Gerald Wallace. And then the next season, like, yeah, they added Isaiah Thomas eventually, but like they went, you know, they got 40 games next year. And so the way that he couches this is that basically it's similarly like systems based argument for sort of continued growth, right? Continued success. And like, we haven't, like, D'Angelo Russell is an enormous, is like sort of the Isaiah Thomas thing. We haven't had a really great look at him because he's been hurt for a little bit of the season. And now this seems to be like this last couple of months here is going to be like the perfect sort of, like way to get in gear for like a potentially breakout season next year to really beat the odds. So like, if my version of this going into the season, my whole, expectations, my whole hopes and dreams were basically married to individual growth.
Yes.
And I cannot say that hasn't happened for, I mean, Jared Allen is a player who I am excited about, and I did not expect that to be the case. LeVert and Rondae Hollis-Jeffersons have made, you know, large strides in various ways. D'Angelo Russell seems to be percolating and becoming the franchise cornerstone that we all hope and pray he can be. So like, if all those things continue going in that direction for another season, then yes, I think that like you have to look at this as just this big, you know, not as an individual thing, but as part of the larger continuum of success that we could hopefully have.
Well, and it's like, so when you have like a video game, like a NBA, NFL, whatever you have, and you do the franchise draft your own players mode, and what do is you grab players you know are going to be good 3 years from now, and you just, each year their growth is massive. So you grab guys in the later rounds who you know, like, you know, are real super young players who will then be really good each year. This year is the best year they've had so far, where like they're jumping up 7 points overall in their overall ranking in NBA 2K. You know, I mean, as Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, you look at each of these players. Spencer Dinwiddie was a nothing, and now he's a something. He's gone down from his peak earlier in the year, but he's still a something. He's still proven as at least a backup in the NBA. Super valuable for having him for nothing. There's still a chance that they can flip him for a late first-round pick coming up in this draft. I wonder, so we had the report from Zach Lowe that we've talked about before, that Cleveland offered their own first-round pick for Spencer Dinwiddie, and that the Nets came back, and we don't know what they offered, but they offered, they said we'd only take some very large amount for Spencer Dinwiddie to be traded. You know, I wonder what the Nets' evaluation of Spencer Dinwiddie is right now, because he's shooting something like 39% from the field. A lot of that is weighed down from when he didn't have D'Lo next to him, because he's really not the guy that should be taking all the shots, and he still thinks he's the guy that should be taking all the shots. He's the guy that should be distributing the ball and doing sort of moving the ball along as opposed to putting the ball in the hoop. I wonder where the Nets are going to be after these. I think the Nets have 17 games left. When the season ends, where are Marks and Atkinson going to think and value Spencer Dinwiddie, especially comparing his growth with Caris LeVert, who honestly, you know, I sort of famously said that they should trade Jabari Parker for, which I'm not still absolutely against at that point. I wasn't. You know, Caris LeVert has shown tremendous growth. D'Lo, while he has been out games and he's had some shaky games since he's come back, the talent is still so obvious there. It's incredible. Like, are they going to still value Spencer Dinwiddie as much as they did? And will that price, that massive price that they put up before, will it decrease? As we get closer to the draft, free agency, when players are more able to be moved than in the middle of the season, I don't know. We'll see Brian.
Yeah. We got a bunch of emails. I don't know if we want to go through them or maybe we should save them for next week. There's a couple of good ones in there.
Let's pop through a couple of them. Just run through a few.
Okay. So first one I want to get to is from Cherboy Satya Adusumili. Hey guys, huge fan of the pod. Huge fan of you, dog. I have two questions for you. I heard tweets from you and other sources about Mo Wagner.
There we go.
His family dressed in Nets gear. Will that play
It's a Wagner.
Sorry, Wagner. And you know what's funny? I made a point. In my head, I was listening. So I was watching a bunch of Mo Wagner clips. And every time an announcer said Wagner, I was like, you jerk. It's Wagner. And then I went ahead and did it. Mo Wagner will play a factor to the Nets when deciding whether or not to draft him. Two, D'Angelo Russell sat on the bench for the last two of the three fourth quarters. Is that a concern Marks and Atkinson's need to address? Great questions, Satya. So I watched some Mo Wagner.
Give it to me. What's your impression?
Slow, dude. I mean, he's slow as hell.
Yeah.
I don't know what's up with that.
So I watched him live at the Big Ten tournament. I went to some of the games. He's the classic guy who's going to trick you in college to make you think that he's good because he does put up points and he gets rebounds and he can do a lot in college, but he's going to get eaten up in the pros unless if he becomes Kelly Olynyk. Like that's really the only path you get to being relevant at this point.
Frank Kaminsky. It's got Frank Kaminsky written all over him.
And like Frank Kaminsky was so good in college, like really awesome in college. I think people don't remember it because now he doesn't look like anything. I mean, that Charlotte team is just filled with college all-stars who aren't good in the pros. Okay. Do I love that? So the tweets that Satya is talking about is that I tweeted out from our account that on the big screen, they were doing these terrible, you know, like in commercial break, they were giving people from, you know, the Indiana players and Michigan players bagel or pizza, taxi cab or subway, Statue of Liberty or Empire State Building. It was like, and oh my God, some guy from Indiana, literally they asked him what's his favorite bagel, and he said chocolate chip bagel. I wanted to jump through the screen and get him, Brian.
So he came to New York and somebody served him a chocolate chip bagel?
No. They were just, you know, they were just asking these questions. Some guy, some PR person was doing this for the big screen. They were just asking him, what's your favorite bagel? And he said, chocolate chip bagel.
Good Lord.
Broke my heart. But Mo Wagner was asked Nets Knicks. And he said, Nets. So of course I love him, but he's not right for this team.
Is he going to get picked? Where does he go?
I wonder if he's like... So the problem is, like, he's probably going to get picked by Sacramento in the first round, right? like just knowing the way Vlade operates, the fact that they picked Georgie Papanikolaou or whoever he was, he seems like a Vlade Divac type pick. Also, just like sub thing about Mo Wagner is that it seems like everyone on the court, his teammates included, hate him. He's like the Mr. Yappy Yappy, talking to everyone, yelling in everyone's face, yelling at teammates, yelling at opponents, yelling at coaches. He's super intense, which I like, but I don't think he's going to fit in with like nice boy Jared Allen. You know what I'm saying, bro?
Yep. So I'm going to go over to some free agency talk.
Ooh. Yes.
We're already getting into it.
Yes.
So Cherboy Alistair Hackett. Hey guys, I'm a big fan of the pod. My question is in regards to this year's free agency. I don't think we should just stand pat or sign some small name players, which many Nets fans are expecting. I think that the main focus for the summer should be Jabari
Parker.
He would fit this team perfectly, as he's a stretch four we desperately need. The Bucks wouldn't give him a max offer, so maybe we could, and the Bucks wouldn't match. What do you guys think, and would you offer him a max deal? Calling Jabari a stretch four is kind of interesting. I'm not sure about that.
You know what? I think it's a stretch.
Oh my! That was an authentic laugh, too. I thought you were going to do one of your fake laughs. You really tickled yourself.
That was good.
So I agree. It is a bit of a stretch. Not that I don't want him, of course, because I do. But does he slide in naturally in our very conspicuously gaping power forward hole.
Yeah. Well, he does defensively. Like, it would be very Nets to just get a guy who's all offense and then not worry that he would be defense. I mean, I'd honestly, you know, I ride or die with Jabari, but if it's max offer Jabari or minimum offer for Jared or for Dante Cunningham, I'd rather do minimum offer Dante Cunningham. And I just don't I don't think a max deal is what you need to pay Jabari Parker, especially, I mean, everyone keeps saying there no one's going to be throwing him on money this offseason. So I don't – it's not a max deal. It could be, you know, $15 million a year, which is a lot of money. But I don't know. I don't know what area the number would have to go down for me to get super comfortable with having Jabari Parker in a long-term deal. It's just a lot of injuries at this point.
And also – you know, like I'd have to look at his percentages and stuff, but he just doesn't take a lot of three pointers. And he doesn't make a lot that many. I mean, like he's at like 0.9 a game I'm looking currently for this very abbreviated season for him. But that seems to be sort of consistent with previous seasons. And if you're, I mean, by today's standards, that's not a meaningful amount, of 3-point shooting. So you want to be in that, you want to be in that Robert Covington over to a game sort of space. You know, I've always had a thing for Bob Covington, by the way.
Yeah.
Love to get him on the team somehow.
Well, if LeBron goes to Philly, they may have to dump Robert Covington. So we're here. We're here for you, Philly.
So I guess like to tie a bow on that, I want Jabari Parker just as much as the next guy. But, you know, lots to consider there, Mike. As you said, lots to consider. So another cheer boy, Robbie Rose, has been a verbose emailer with lots of – so I remember at one point he emailed me saying he didn't want me to read his previous emails. So I just wanted to air out the fact that he's been going back and forth with Dinwiddie and Dinwiddie's future on the team. And I just want to say, Robbie, I love your emails. I've been reading them, and I'm gonna save that for me personally. That's just my thing. So cheer boy, Jose – I am done with the regular season. I'm in draft mode. You guys went to the Big Ten tournament. Who piqued your interest? Sorry, this is GNYR. We know the Nets have scouted three guys heavily, Hutchinson, Diallo, and Wagner. Who'd you take from those threes and why? So we talked about Wagner. Did you see the other guys he mentioned, Hutchinson and Diallo?
Well, Hutchinson's Boise State product. He's like 6'7", wingspan guy. I love the idea of like, because, like, Boise State's on the level of Fresno State, and the, like, sort of, now, this is, like, every NBA scout compares some guy from a small school with that body type to Paul George, but he's got the Paul George body type. He's pretty productive. I love him. I mean, my whole focus is that stretch four guy. I'm more of looking, not even for a three who's a four. I want a four that can maybe then play some five at times, like for super small lineups, which the Nets are not averse to. I like Hutchinson a lot. I like, so I was in the Big Ten tournament. There's Keita Bates Jopp from Ohio State, who's 6'7". He plays power forward. He's 36% from three, which isn't like amazing, but 6'7" with long arms. I'm only almost, it's like, what's weird about this, Brian, is that like I feel like I'm so in the mode for drafting for need for the Nets, where shouldn't they just be getting the most talented guy? It doesn't matter what position. Like, if they drafted a really talented point guard, would that be bad? Are you anti point guard at this point because they just have so many guys?
Kinda, yeah. I mean,
yeah, I am too. I'm anti point guard.
I mean, like, I get it. Like, everyone says draft the best player available. But that's, you really do have to sort of factor in the politics of the team. I mean, like, you're not going to be starting a guy over D'Angelo Russell at this point. I don't care who he is, where we're drafting. You do have to kind of, so is that why you're talking about Hamadou Diallo?
Well, yeah, because I kind of think, so he could fit enough on the team because he's like a two guard, maybe a three guard. You know, it really doesn't matter anymore. We're not that strict on things. It's like, right, it's ball handler, wings, and then bigs. But, like, he hasn't been that impressive on Kentucky this year. I know he's incredibly talented. I just don't. You know, I think we kind of get the guys get stuck on high school rankings, and then they continue to survive into that ranking, then carries over to NBA draft rankings. When I don't know why we think of it that way. If a guy is not productive in college, then maybe we should not consider him to be like such a great prospect.
Yeah, I mean, people just love. Well, first of all, he's from New York, so that also totally adds to your. to your visibility there. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I actually, I've watched him. I watched him in high school for a minute. I haven't been watching him in Kentucky. Or like watched like the clips, the like YouTube compilations of him on from his high school stuff, which are like super fun. And he's like a really fun player to watch, obviously. And he's got the, you know, all of the sort of, he meets all the fun criteria. But we're not a fun team. Mike, we don't have any use for fun.
Besides Jared Allen's dunks. And
yeah.
But like, so for to train our listeners here, this is what you should be doing for the draft is that don't, I mean, obviously Jared Allen fell, right? I think there was an understanding that he would go 12-ish and he went 22. I would only look at prospects on sort of the top boards, the ESPN, whoever you want to go to, from, you know, honestly, like, 18 to 42 to figure out who they're going to pick with that first round pick. I mean, they have the Nets have then the two pretty early second round picks, but just look in that crop and just dig into those players. Like, look at them, look at their wingspan, look at their stats.
Always look at the wingspan first.
The wingspan's the only thing that matters because that's the only thing that's going to matter if a guy can play the four. And the problem is when you do that, there's just not a lot of guys in that range that could play the four on this team. Like Kevin Knox is from Kentucky. He weighs like 200 pounds, but he's 6'9 with long arms. But he's going to be drafted in the lottery. So you almost can't even think about him. He doesn't exist in our universe at this moment. The Nets could make a trade to move up in the first round somehow if they attach Dinwiddie with that Raptors pick and move up in some way. Now, that would be super interesting and crazy. So just look at the players from basically like 18 to 45, let's say. Dig into them and just find the best and your most favorite one and pray that the Nets will get them. I mean, that's really the position we're in.
By the way, I've already been picking up the rumors that this draft will be a top-heavy draft. It's sort of like Groundhog Day, whenever like you hear about like whether a draft is going to be good or bad. It's like Punxsutawney Phil says this will be a top-heavy draft this year. And predictions are becoming clear for next year too that it'll be a bad draft class next year
when the Nets finally have their pick. Yeah,
when we finally have our pick. That's what I'm hearing. That's what Punxsutawney says. There are other emails, and I'm sorry, we will hopefully get to you next time. Do you want to do any news around the league, or should we just tie a bow on it?
Let's tie a bow on it.
Cool.
Thank you all for listening. We are the Glue Guys. We'll be back with you next week. Brian, we're gonna have a special guest, maybe?
Yes.
So we'll have a special guest at some point, and then we'll keep getting other guests, and it's gonna be great, and we're gonna ride this season. 17 games left. The Nets are going all the way, Brian. It's happening. Thank you so much for listening. Good night, yeah. Brian.
Hey, netsdaily.com, almightyballer.com, iTunes. Ratings, reviews, 5 stars. We want them. We need them. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, boy.